Blog Talk Radio.
Cowards try to change our lives, change the things they despise in America. But heroes, fueled by freedom, that unalienable right to be, came to rescue the injured, rescue the innocent, rescue these truths we hold to be.
Afternoon to you once again. Jason Hawes here. Happy to be here with you on another Saturday on American Faith Today. It is February 27th, 2016, as we have our bouncy, bouncy ball weather as I look outside my window here at my apartment. Cold one day and snowy and not real warm necessarily today, but warmer. And tomorrow it's going to be fairly nice here, and then I think Monday night it's going to get colder again. So that's Ohio weather for you, but hopefully you've had a fantastic week and a good weekend, a good start to your weekend. Or whenever you happen to listen to this, if you're listening live, the chat room is open, and call-in line as well, 347-989-8387 if you listen on the archives. Well, whenever you listen, I hope you're having a good day, or you've had a good day, and a good week to come. I wanted to talk today about, in doing a little bit of show prep and trying to figure out just what exactly to talk about today, I actually came across a lot of stories from the Washington Times, kind of the culture and cultural clash section of the Washington Times website, and I got a couple other sources here as well, but the overwhelming theme that I decided to go with today is the division that we have in this country. You know, we've got some real problems, needless to say, in this country, and we've got problems with our debt, we've got problems and threats from terrorism, we've got problems, you know, you name it. But certainly one of the problems that we have is that we are a divided people. We're divided along certainly political and ideological lines, which is somewhat natural. Not everybody in the world is going to agree. Not everybody in the country is going to agree. And as I mentioned in the write-up, that even Jesus Christ himself said, in one other place as well, but as I quoted in Luke chapter 12, that he did not come to bring, certainly not in his first advent in particular, he did not come to bring peace on earth, but to bring division. And so it is that obviously you have a division between people who are believers in Christ and people who are not. You have, unfortunately, divisions even within the body of Christ, not necessarily in a lot of cases major divisions that lead us to go to battle in one way or another against each other, but disagreements that lead to this denomination and that denomination and what have you. But, you know, there are divisions that come along naturally, and then there are divisions that are enemies, be it Satan, who, of course, is our chief enemy, and really anyone who is of him and doing his work, it all goes back to him. But be it Satan or be it people in this world, who would seek to divide us along more trivial lines, and certainly primary on today's show, and unfortunately rather primary in this country, being divided along racial lines as well. And certainly I will have several stories that I'll hopefully get to cover most, if not all of them, with Black Lives Matter and people of that ilk. But I wanted to talk, first of all, today, with what happened and with what was said and with what came, what I came across yesterday. And I first saw this, and I was working yesterday, but, a lot of times when I'm working, I'm checking my cell phone and so forth, because I do have at least some fair amount of independence with what I do. I don't have anybody looking over my shoulder for much of the day at all. But like I said, I'll be checking my cell phone, what have you. And I first saw this on the Facebook page or a timeline of a friend, a Facebook friend. And I've since seen it, of course, or I later saw it on several different sources. And I posted it on my own timeline as well, which a couple people liked when I brought up. Look, I mentioned on my own timeline that I kind of needed to, or was asking people to pray for me and with me, because the politics thing, even though obviously I talk about it, as I am right now, as I will today, but it wears, or it's been wearing on me. And this whole Donald Trump thing, which, again, I do need to some extent, to let it go. I need to reassure myself and remind myself that no matter what, it's in God's hands, and whatever happens, it's happening according to his plan and his reason. Be it good or bad, which it always winds up being good in the end. But be it positive or negative in the short term, it's as he would have it. But I do have this sore spot, or I do have this little weakness or pet peeve within myself, in which, and understand, I don't claim to be all knowledgeable or claim to be or to have all the answers, or to be infallible. Obviously, I'm not. Obviously, no human, no flesh, man, or woman is. But obviously, I have my beliefs, and like everyone else, like all of you, I tend to believe that my beliefs have been validated, that they are correct as I see them. And if there's anything that really does strike a nerve with me, strike a sore spot, it's what I see as seeing people not only making mistakes, but people flat out being deceived. And that's where a lot of my frustration comes with this Donald Trump phenomenon and Donald Trump leading the Republican nomination, and quite possibly even, of course, being the Republican nominee. This guy, to me, is a dangerous, unhinged, fascist lunatic. I don't know, is that plain enough for you? He's an authoritarian. He is in this not for the sake of you or I, not for the sake of the country, but he is in this solely for himself. And I believe that can be documented with what he said yesterday, which was so incredibly dangerous, so incredibly offensive, if you actually care about the Constitution. Now, this comes from Countercurrent News, but it's been all over the place. Trump, and he said this yesterday at a rally in, I believe, Texas, Trump promises harsh media criticism of him will be illegal if he's president. Now, again, this from Countercurrent News. It's an article written by, actually, I don't know if there's an author attached to the article. It's just the website. But it asks, have you ever made fun of Donald Trump? Have you ever read an editorial that really lays into him with criticisms of his proposed policies? or even his hair? Well, if Trump becomes president, he promises that things will change and these sorts of critiques will no longer be legal. It almost sounds like satire, but during a speech in Texas on Friday morning, yesterday, the Republican candidate and frontrunner, Donald Trump, said he wants to sue news outlets if they print or run any negative stories about him. Now, he did acknowledge that currently the First Amendment of the Constitution protects a free press and thus shields journalists from suits like this, but no, the First Amendment isn't going to stand in the way of Donald Trump. No, absolutely not. Trump said on Friday that he would limit the press using litigation, which of course is one of his favorite tactics. I think he gets up every day wanting to sue somebody or thinking about who he can sue, and then at lunchtime worries about who's suing him. But would limit the press using litigation that would be permitted due to, quote, opening up libel laws and allowing them to include things like criticism and critiques that he doesn't like. I mean, and think about this. Let this soak in. He said, I think the media is among the most dishonest groups of people I've ever met. They're terrible. Well, you know what? That may be, and in a lot of cases I agree. But you know what? They still are protected by the First Amendment. So Trump promised to change things through legislating what he considers, quote, honest reporting. One of the things I'm going to do, he said, and this is only going to make it tougher for me, and I've never said this before, but one of the things I'm going to do if I win is I'm going to open up our libel laws so when they write purposely negative and horrible and false articles, we can sue them and win lots of money. Because, again, suing and winning lots of money, of course, is a lot of what makes Donald Trump Donald Trump. He said, we're going to open up those libel laws. He went even further and made it clear what he meant, saying, we're going to open up those libel laws, folks. In other words, if I may, he repeated himself. And we're going to have people sue you like you never get sued before. And as Donald Trump himself has said, as I recall him saying, and nobody brings lawsuits like I bring lawsuits, or nobody sues like I sue. Paraphrasing, of course. Folks, this is absolutely silly on one hand, but downright scary on another. This guy would absolutely tear apart, completely eviscerate the First Amendment, and not just on this. Let's go back and I'll have to move off this eventually because I do have other stories. I could probably talk about this all day. Or all show, but let's go back through a timeline, which I don't have here in front of me. But mentally, let's jog our memories. We know that Donald Trump advocated, which he walked back, which he pulled away from. But we know that he advocated shutting down the internet or portions of the internet to keep ISIS from recruiting new people. Noble goal, perhaps, but there is a First Amendment problem there, which he actually acknowledged and said that if you object based on freedom of speech, you're a foolish person. And also, not to get off that subject of the First Amendment, but when I was digging that up again last night, I was reminded that during a December debate, when Rand Paul challenged him on that, he also challenged him when in that same debate, the Republican Party frontrunner, you know, the party that I generally vote for, at least as a conservative, or try to vote for conservatives, actually, but the Republican Party frontrunner advocated basically targeting non-combatants, targeting women and children, family members of terrorists for, I don't know, murder, I guess. I mean, that's what it comes down to, which as Rand Paul actually pointed out quite well, as far as that goes, would be a violation of the Geneva Convention, and basically we had a leading candidate advocating us more or less enacting war crimes. But anyway, he said, shut down the internet. He backed off of that, but he said, shut down the internet. If you don't agree, you're a foolish person. You know, he advocated closing down radicalized mosques. Now, I can see the point to this. I can see the argument for this. My concern would be, what happens when a Democrat gets into office, and what if we have a future President Anise Parker, the lesbian former mayor of Houston, Texas, or someone of that ilk who takes a look at churches that preach that homosexuality is sinful, won't perform gay marriages, and decides that those churches, by society standards, are radical in their views and need to be closed down. And now the guy advocates basically just doing away with freedom of press. And what does Donald Trump consider libel, by the way, or what has Donald Trump tried to sue the press on before or threatened to sue the press on before? Well, he sued a journalist, which he lost the lawsuit. I don't have it here in front of me. But he sued a journalist for, quote, underreporting what his actual net worth was. So apparently in Donald Trump's eyes, that's liable. He has threatened to sue the Washington Post if they run an article on him or a series of articles about his past business bankruptcies. And, of course, he considers defamation when during a political campaign and a primary election, someone runs a negative ad against him featuring his own words from his own mouth, combined with him saying that he can change into anything that he wants to change into, and he considers that to be defamation. But look, this is a guy, I mean, he gets upset because the media is being mean to him, and so his answer to that is not to combat lies with truth, but to combat lies with lawsuits, and to basically find a workaround the First Amendment of the Constitution. And by the way, I'm not going to get into it because, like I said, I do have to move on to other things, but I'll just hit on some high points here from an article I just saw from the same website saying Harvard psychologist explains Trump is dangerous because he's literally a narcissistic psychopath. And there's actually several people. You got the Mayo Clinic definition explaining narcissistic personality disorder is a mental disorder in which people have an inflated sense of their own importance, a deep need for admiration, and a lack of empathy for others. But behind this mask of ultra-confidence lies a fragile self-esteem that's vulnerable to the slightest criticism. That's Donald Trump. And that's not only Donald Trump, that's Barack Obama, who we've complained about for years and years and years as a narcissist. And now, as the Republican Party, and unfortunately as some conservatives, we want to go ahead and put another narcissist in the White House. Because, hey, at least he's our narcissist. And it is so very downright scary, quite frankly, to see his followers absolutely bend to his will. I like to read Matt Walsh's Twitter feed, even though I don't have a Twitter feed myself. I like to read his Twitter feed from time to time. And he collected a series of tweets from respondents at Breitbart News when Breitbart News posted this story. There was a guy or a person saying that what we need to do is to have a military-type operation to strike back at the media to get people like George Soros and somebody else, take them to Gitmo and start waterboarding them. I mean, you know, it is downright scary what following Donald Trump is doing to people and doing to their minds. You know, I saw one time at when I was still posting at the Free Republic forums at the board, I do post on the Facebook page. I saw somebody one time say that we need to have a President Donald Trump, quote, punish our enemies. Again, one of the exact things that we complain about Barack Obama doing with the IRS and so forth, EPA. We want Donald Trump to do the same thing, basically, because, hey, he's at least on our side. I'm telling you, it is very, very dangerous. And anyway, I do have to move off of that. I would spend more time on it, but I've got other stories to get to. I don't know, without shortening them or missing out on them, I don't know. It is what it is. Like I said, if people can't see the warning signs with Donald Trump, they're just not looking. And quite frankly, they just don't care. And I understand people being angry, and that anger is justified, that anger is valid, but how many decisions in your own life, how many actions in your own life that in your past that you've taken with anger as the primary motivator, how did those work out for you? Did those have absolutely no negative consequences whatsoever? Did it go 100% exactly right? At least in every case? Or did you wind up regretting some of what you did when you acted out of anger, even if it was justified in some sense? You know, it's not just about us. It's not just about me as an individual. It's not just about you as an individual. It's about 320 plus million individuals who will be affected by whoever we put into office. And, you know, to me, character absolutely counts. And it's like I put on my own Facebook timeline. We could have, if things stay the way they are, we're going to have a Democrat Party nominee who the FBI has said there's enough information, there's enough evidence to indict her criminally if the Department of Justice so chose to, and a Republican Party nominee who sometime in a few months will be taking the stand to explain how Trump University did not defraud the people who say they have been defrauded. That's not good for America. I'm sorry, character counts. But anyway, getting back to this division. Now, I wanted to touch on this. Like I said, most of it's going to be racial. Like I said, the Black Lives Matter kind of people, but this was a story that struck me. This was a story that I needed to share. It's very concerning as well. It's very typical, unfortunately. It's from Washington Times. A Marine banned from his daughter's graduation after objecting to Islam lessons. Jessica Chasmar, Washington Times. A former Marine is asking a judge to lift a no trespass order ahead of his daughter's graduation after her high school reportedly banned him from campus for objecting to classroom lessons about Islam. And his attorney, his representation, is saying that his daughter is in the final semester of her senior year, and as it stands right now, she's going to have to go through that life experience without her dad there. The Thomas More, Michigan-based Thomas More Law Center, is representing this gentleman, this Marine. The dispute stems from an October 2014 classroom assignment at La Plata High School in Charles County, Maryland. Mr. Wood's daughter, a then junior, was reportedly asked in her world history class to memorize, which we're seeing this more and more, memorize the five pillars of Islam and recite the, I guess it's the Shahada, the Muslim statement of faith that declares there is no God but Allah. She had been taught, according to school papers submitted to federal court, that most Muslims' faith is, quote, stronger than the average Christian. Mr. Wood called the assignment an assault on his family's Christian faith. He said that when he called the school to complain and asked for his daughter to be given a different assignment, school officials issued a no trespass order against him, and he has not been allowed on campus since. The order said Mr. Wood, quote, made verbal threats against the school, but Mr. Wood insisted he only threatened to take his concerns to the media and hire a lawyer. He and his wife, Melissa, are now suing the Charles County school system for violating their daughter's civil and constitutional rights. The First Amendment prohibits the promotion of the religion of Islam over other faiths, such as Christianity or Judaism, in our public schools, says the complaint filed in the U.S. District Court in Maryland. Mr. Wood's daughter is set to graduate this June. Well, obviously it does, especially according to the liberals. I mean, if this was, we're going to recite the Lord's Prayer, or we're going to have a lesson in which you write out or state that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, Jesus Christ, Lord and Savior, King and Kings, Jesus Christ, the living Word made flesh, Jesus Christ, the Messiah, obviously they wouldn't want that being taught in schools, especially our secular leftist friends. But we are seeing more and more these five pillars of Islam, which, by the way, is a component of Common Core as well, or will be a component of Common Core, is trying to get more Islamic indoctrination into it from things that we have read and heard anyway. Perhaps you have as well. But anyway, there's two sides to every story, obviously, but he certainly had a right to be shocked and offended and in disbelief over what they were making his daughter learn, recite. I mean, it is basically, again, what the secular leftists say we can't do, teaching religion, teaching a particular religion, and teaching from a religious text or religious tenets in school, you know, and again, favoring one over all the others. And so, you know, it's unfortunate. Like I said, it's typical. Now, moving on to some of these stories, like I said, that basically are Black Lives Matter type of things, all sorts of things going on college campuses. I don't know if you heard of Ben Shapiro. I happened to see this at his website, or I happened to see some things were going on with Ben Shapiro. He's, of course, a conservative journalist, I believe a talk show host as well. And apparently he ran into some resistance and some difficulty at a college campus, which we know many of these college campuses, if they find out a conservative is coming to their college campus, they protest like mad, both students and faculty. But this was race-based as much as anything. And apparently a female Breitbart News reporter who was there helping Ben Shapiro in some way was assaulted at least three times Thursday while covering a hotly contested speech from her colleague, editor Ben Shapiro, at California State University in Los Angeles, according to video footage that she captured from the event. The incident began outside the event as Adele Nazarian was recording members of the college's Black Student Union who were protesting Mr. Shapiro's speech. And I have no idea why they were protesting his speech. Probably, again, because he's a conservative more than, although they probably equate that with racist as well. But anyway, Nazarian saying, "I was videotaping the procession of the Black Student Union, and one woman noticed me making a video of the event. She approached me and said, 'I will, quote, beat the piss out of you.' She approached me and she shoved me, and then she tried to push my iPhone down. And then the lead organizer, carrying a cone megaphone, noticed the confrontation and came back towards me and hit my phone with his megaphone. The front of the cone at bottom was pushed in by the force of the impact. He then shoved it in my face and kept screaming at me." There was video and audio that captured what Ms. Nazarian appears to back up her account. She said, "You're physically abusing me right now. That's physical assault." The man, the lead organizer, then began shouting at her through his makeshift megaphone, claiming he never touched her. Ms. Nazarian continued to cover the protest inside the campus venue, where she was assaulted again by a different demonstrator. "Girl, I will throw your phone," a Black woman says, before grabbing Ms. Nazarian's phone, a different video showed. Other protesters yelled, "No, you won't," and stopped the woman from further physical contact. And again, screenshots were captured of the abusers' faces, and they were posted on the Breitbart News website. Mr. Shapiro's speech didn't go on without incident either, as the conservative writer discussed the threats he had received prior to visiting the campus. The fire alarm went off and lights started flashing, according to the Blaze, trying to basically kill his presentation. Shapiro said, folks, if you just joined the live stream, someone pulled the fire alarm to stop us because this is how fascists do it. Where the explicit is the administration on this campus? And the university apparently had initially decided to cancel Mr. Shapiro's lecture, but issued a statement Thursday indicating that it would allow the event to proceed. But, you know, again, we've got so much anger, just so much out-and-out rage along, like I said, at this point, in many cases, racial lines, racial divisions. And again, I guess that's enough for that story, but that rage that people are feeling, that people are being indoctrinated with on their campuses, they're being indoctrinated with by their leaders, by the people they consider leaders in their community, by their president, who is nothing more than, on this issue, is nothing more than an Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson-style race baiter at times. Race hustler, you know, claiming all of the incidences in which he had manufactured racism in his mind because him and his wife even telling a story, as I recall, to, I believe it was People magazine, claiming that every single black man or every single young black professional male has had that moment in which they leave a restaurant or leave an establishment and somebody hands him their car keys because they think they must be the valet, apparently. And there was, you know, worse things than that they claimed, I think. But, you know, always manufacturing division, always manufacturing racism, always trying to claim some victimhood status. And what we are also seeing is we're seeing people just out and out fake victimhood status, fake hate crimes, fake persecution. And you know, this is getting very troubling as well. We've heard stories of, along all spectrums, basically, of these protected classes, if you will, or people who are in protected classes, want to be in protected classes. Again, people who are perpetually victims, even when the government hands out special privileges and rights to them. But we've heard of at least a couple cases, again, which I don't have in front of me, but going from memory, in which gays or lesbians claim that their business was burned down or their house was burned down and they actually did it themselves. There was a black law enforcement officer. And again, I don't recall where, I don't have it in front of me, but I recall reading it not all that long ago, who claimed that all this discrimination in his department, claimed that somebody had written a hateful, racist note to him. And unfortunately for him, there was actually a video in the police department of him writing the note himself. Well, now we have black students at the University of Albany charged with hate crime hoax who were attacking a white bus passenger. I don't know if you heard about this. Three black female students who gained national attention after claiming to be victims of a hate crime attack are accused of making the entire story up and have been charged with assaulting a white bus passenger. Ariel Aguido, Asha Burwell, and Alexis Briggs, all 20 years old, have been charged with misdemeanor assault. Ms. Aguido and Ms. Burwell have been charged with falsely reporting the incident, officials at the University of Albany announced Thursday, according to the Albany Times Union. I don't know if that's, sounds like it may be a student newspaper, although maybe it's a city newspaper. But anyway, the women grabbed national headlines and a sympathetic tweet from Democratic presidential frontrunner Hillary Clinton, who of course had her own Black Lives Matter altercation earlier this week. But anyway, these women and young women, after claiming that a group of 10 to 12 white men hurled racial slurs and attacked them on a CDTA bus. I don't know if that's local transportation, I would take it, city transportation, school transportation, but a bus at about 1 a.m. January 30th, while others stood by and did nothing. The alleged incident sparked a large on-campus rally defending women of color, of course, and the social media campaign hashtag DefendBlackGirlsUAlbany. Police now say there is no evidence to back up their story and that the women were the actual aggressors, according to footage. Ah, that nasty footage. Those nasty cameras and those nasty cell phones with cameras that are everywhere these days. That footage captured by cameras on the bus and by witnesses. The actual victim, police said, was a 19-year-old white woman who was also a bus passenger, the Times Union reported. The evidence shows, contrary to how the defendants originally portrayed things, these three individuals were not the victims of a crime, University Police Chief Frank Wiley said in a statement. The evidence indicates that they were actually the aggressors in the physical altercation and that they continued to assault the victim despite the efforts of several passengers to stop them. What happened on the bus was not a, quote, hate crime. Well, I don't like to throw out accusations of hate crimes, but again, by the left's definition, at least if they wanted to be consistent, I think it actually would be a hate crime by their definition, especially when he adds the only person we heard uttering racial epithets was one of the defendants. Ms. Aguido's Albany attorney, Mark Mishler, called the charges unfortunate and cautioned the public to avoid jumping to conclusions without having seen all the evidence, the Times Union reported. Well, they are innocent until proven guilty, but I think we've seen, or I think people have seen, some rather damning evidence. All three women are also facing campus disciplinary proceedings. In a statement, University President Robert Jones asked for the community's continued patience and respect as the judicial process continues. This matter is now in the hands of the criminal justice system, he said. I look forward to the resolution of this case. But again, we have this continued, we're beat down, we're persecuted, and that's happened in history. Obviously, that's happened in history. It happens today. But there's this overwhelming need and this overwhelming desire to gin up even false things to try to, as I said, divide us, to try to create hostility, to more or less try to tear the whole country apart for their own desires, their own needs, for their own empowerment, which is exactly what it's about, is them trying to grab power, power that they feel like that they've been denied, that they're otherwise owed. Now, the last story that I'll cover here, at least in any detail, we've got the Black Lives Matter leader, one of the co-founders, explaining why all lives matter is a racial slur. By the way, I don't know if you happen to see what Facebook has gotten themselves into. Facebook, at their headquarters, in an attempt or in a desire to be clever, I guess, because I guess technically they're now called timelines, but they've been referred to, of course, as walls. And if you have a Facebook account, which, of course, many do, you write on your Facebook wall, or you write on somebody else's Facebook wall. And so at the Facebook headquarters, and somewhere, I believe, in California, their employees are allowed to write on the wall. And there was writing on the wall at the Facebook headquarters saying, Black Lives Matter. Well, that was scribbled out, and written over it was All Lives Matter. And by the way, Facebook apparently has very few actual black employees, for whatever that's worth. But Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO and, of course, creator of Facebook, all upset, saying that you can write whatever you want, but don't scribble out over somebody else's and write over it. Don't degrade the Black Lives Matter movement. Don't be malicious. And they basically were going to be attending some type of what amounts to sensitivity training. But anyway, here, the Black Lives Matter leader explaining why all lives matter is a racial slur. A prominent activist in the Black Lives Matter, again, actually Jessica Chasmar, Washington Times, a prominent activist in the Black Lives Matter movement explained on Fox News recently why she and fellow activists believe the phrase all lives matter is a racial slur. Marissa J. Johnson, saying all lives matter is a new racial slur, co-founders of Black Lives Matter Seattle, said on Brett Baer's Voter Revolt special, white Americans have created the conditions that require a phrase like Black Lives Matter. Now, wait a minute. I mean, let's back up here. Black Lives Matter, when did that spring up? Either after Trayvon Martin or after Michael Brown, right? Both guys who were, not that they should have lost their lives, but both guys who were a couple of thugs, both guys who were being violent, both guys who were trying to beat the crap out of somebody or even kill somebody who lost their lives in the process. But anyway, Marissa Johnson saying, do you know how horrific it is to grow up as a child in a world that so hates you? Well, if that's ingrained in your mind, there's probably no getting that out of your mind. There's such a thing as a self-fulfilling prophecy. She says that you have to literally say to other people, my life matters, and they're like, well, everybody's life matters, while you're literally being gunned down in the street, while you're being rounded up and mass incarcerated and forced into prison slavery. These people are extremists. These people are unhinged. And whatever truth that they have, whatever legitimate qualm and legitimate complaint that is there, is just totally washed away and overshadowed by out-and-out lunacy. Now, she's the one who apparently interrupted Bernie Sanders' campaign rally. She said Bernie Sanders is a far-left candidate for white folks. He's left for the needs and concerns of mainstream white America. She says the Democrat Party has always taken black voters for granted. Well, she's actually right there. She says, this is key. What it's going to take to dismantle white supremacy is white folks actually got to give up something, she said. You have to actually sacrifice yourself. You have to be willing to give up the things that you currently benefit from so that they can take it, so that they can take the power. But again, folks, we've got so much division in this country. We've got so many, you know, no president is going to solve this. No president is going to solve this by building a wall. No president is going to solve this by, you know, illegal immigration is a problem, but it's certainly not our only problem. Maybe not even our most pressing problem. And, you know, it is so sad that we allow ourselves to take our focus off of the Heavenly Father that created us. All the same, in the most basic sense, all his children, all races he created that he called good, everything that he created being good, as says in Genesis chapter 1. And it's also so sad that, again, even getting back to Donald Trump, that when people say, well, he's our only hope, well, if a man with his authoritarian personality, if a man with his narcissistic personality, if a man with his no core values personality is our only hope, then, if I may, we're in deep, deep trouble. We are in deep, deep trouble. Don't put your hope in man. Don't put your hope in Donald Trump. Don't put your hope in any of these candidates, even though, like I said, I do support Ted Cruz. But our hope lies in Christ. Our hope lies in God. Never in man. And in as much as you would put it in man, make sure it's someone with character. Make sure it's someone with integrity. Make sure it's someone that, as best you can tell, you can count on, that has values, that believes in God, if I may. and that it's evident in their life that they don't have to say it over and over again to try to prove it to everybody, including themselves.